Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Zeppelin. Okay, what is the date today? Is the 27th of January. I'd like to thank everybody sent me get well cards. I appreciate it. Let me see. We're just going to play some tapes that people have sent in during the week and that I don't get a chance to do on Saturday night. And I want to appreciate everybody that sends me in tapes. I do appreciate it. I apologize. We just don't have time to play all these tapes, but play some tonight and give you the credit. I appreciate it. I've been looking for this guy for a while. His name is Bill, and he does the Still Report, and it's Bill Still, and he's on Rumble. And I didn't realize where he went. He disappeared. Got kicked off of YouTube.
Good afternoon. I'm still reporting on the coup. Tucker Carlson is probably the best journalist working in television today. However, occasionally he, like all of us, slips up. During his first segment late last week, he opined on things that happened in D.C. regarding President Richard M. Nixon when Tucker was only 4 years old. Although the errors are few, they are significant. And the record needs to be corrected because it reveals that there was a Nixon coup attempt 50 years earlier. It failed in a way that the current Biden coup has corrected, and therefore Biden has succeeded wildly. Although we may ultimately defeat Biden's coup, it has wreaked havoc on the United States, where the Nixon coup attempt did not. But understanding how Nixon failed and Biden succeeded is key if the United States is to remain a free country.
So what's notable as a political matter is that every one of these disasters, the fentanyl epidemic, the chaos and crime in our cities, the invasion underway through Texas, Arizona, and California, all of those deeply concern Americans. We're not guessing at that. Polls show it very clearly. By contrast, how many voters do you think are lying awake right now worrying that public officials might violate some obscure federal classification law?
Well, actually, quite a few. There are 4.2 million Americans with security clearances. That's 1.26% of the population. Most clearance holders understand what's at stake. Plus, by definition, this cohort of clearance holders is way more patriotic than the general population and way more important to the preservation of freedom for ourselves and our posterity, as everyone who took a similar life path can attest. At age 18, I took a year off from college to do a work-study program that was a job as an engineering draftsman on a relatively unimportant CIA project, but the job did require a secret clearance. At that age, getting the clearance is way easier than if you're age 40. Why? Because there's much less investigation to do. You haven't lived many places or had that many neighbors for an investigator to go talk to. Having a clearance has given me an advantage in reporting the things I love to report about, because I understand how it works and why it's important. So I have moved between reporting jobs, which didn't require a security clearance, and government contract work, which generally does, my entire life.
And yet, it is classified documents, not our open borders, that the Justice Department is punishing Joe Biden for. Why is that? What's going on here? Well, it's simple. Washington is protecting itself. Joe Biden alone is responsible for this crime. He alone took home classified documents. He didn't have help in doing that.
This was true a few days ago, but now this fast-moving story has taken another turn. Mike Pence has come riding in to save Biden from prosecution on a reckless handling of classified materials charge, a charge that was impossible to pin on Trump, no matter how hard they tried. Pence is attempting to set a new precedent for vice presidents by conveniently having his attorneys discover some classified documents at his home. Yes, this seems to be confirmation that Mike Pence has been working with Biden all along. However, Tucker's next point is right on.
But allowing the country to be invaded, that's not something you can do by yourself. So if Biden were to be taken down for opening the southern border, a lot of other people would go with him. He had a lot of accomplices. Permanent Washington doesn't want that. And ultimately, and here's the point, permanent Washington is in charge. It's not the democracy you imagine. We're seeing that now. So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon.
I don't know where Tucker got this from, but I disagree with his interpretation of events. I'll explain why in a minute.
Yet somehow, without a single vote being cast by a single American voter, Richard Nixon was kicked out of office and replaced by the only unelected president in American history. So we went from the most popular president to a president nobody voted for. Wait a minute, you may ask. Why didn't I know that? Wasn't Richard Nixon a criminal? Wasn't he despised by all decent people? No, he wasn't. In fact, if any president could claim to be the people's choice, it was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was reelected in 1972 by the largest margin of the popular vote ever recorded before or since. Nixon got 17 million more votes than his opponent.
But that was because who was his opponent? George McGovern, the most leftist anti-war candidate in American presidential history. In the 1972 presidential election, Nixon beat McGovern by a 60.7 to 37.5 margin. Even Democrats were so unenthusiastic for McGovern's candidacy that the voter turnout for that election was down by 5.6%. It wasn't that Nixon was so good. He won because McGovern was so blatantly leftist. But even more importantly, Nixon won because his very effective political operatives were able to hide his nefarious activities. Who was the first president to send Henry Kissinger to China to open diplomatic discussions with the CCP? Much to the dismay of the nationalist Chinese in Taiwan. Good old Richard Milhouse Nixon, who then followed up with the first presidential state visit to China in 1972, opening formal diplomatic relations with Communist China. It was Richard Milhouse Nixon. To the vast majority of the voting populace, Richard Nixon was known as Tricky Dick. There's a reason for that. But there is so much more to the Nixon coup than you have heard about before. Watergate, June 1972. Former CIA employees under direction of the White House were caught breaking into the Democratic National Headquarters at the Watergate office complex in Washington. An informed intelligence source has told me that the burglars were working on a tip that there was evidence that Democratic presidential candidate Senator George McGovern had accepted substantial, illegal contributions from Fidel Castro. Nixon maneuvered successfully to keep an investigation of the incident relatively quiet until after his reelection bid was successful in November of 1972. Then, in early 1973, the famed Senate Watergate hearings started. The Glasshouse tapes, January 1, 1973. A mass-market paperback book entitled The Glasshouse Tapes, written by Lewis Tackwood, claimed that he was a member of a super secret domestic intelligence unit of the Los Angeles Police Department, which was working on a plan to create a chaotic domestic political situation in the United States that would give President Nixon the justification for declaring martial law. Packwood claimed that he helped set up a secret operation which would allow anti-war demonstrators to break onto the floor of the 1972 Republican Convention, then scheduled to take place in San Diego, just as Vice President Spiro Agnew began to speak. Packwood and his accomplices would then cause a riot on the convention floor, with the demonstrators battling police. During the resulting uproar, the vice president would be shot on nationwide TV to gain maximum impact. This incident would be followed by a wave of nationwide bombings for which the revolutionary left would openly take credit. In response, President Nixon would then have the justification to declare a state of national emergency and essentially suspend constitutional rights. Interestingly, this book, The Glasshouse Tapes, now sells on Amazon for nearly $1,000 used in fair condition. According to Senator Barry Goldwater's autobiography, Nixon never liked Agnew because his nomination had been forced upon him by the conservative wing of the Republican Party, and so Agnew to Nixon was expendable. It was the nomination of George McGovern that signaled the shift of the Democrat Party towards European communism on the one hand and the Maoists of the Chinese Communist Party on the other. In short, basically the D.C. bureaucracy was changing over into a safe space where leftists, even communists, dwelt. Definitely not a meritocracy. So Nixon was correct there that his corrective actions were to cut loose the FBI to start illegally spying on the American people. And the results of that are what we now see in all the intel agencies. The U.S. Constitution be damned, the ends justify the means. The Packwood plot was never reported by Watergate stars Woodward and Bernstein. Their goal was apparently to limit the damage to Nixon and to steer reporting away from a much deeper conspiracy, one which is today known as the deep state, but it should more correctly be known as the leftist bureaucratic state. Former Nixon aide John Dean hinted that he may have been aware of this incident. In a December 1982 interview on ABC's After Hours, Dean said that he knew about these assassination plots, but said that he didn't know just what to make of them. The Committee to Repeal the 22nd Amendment, the summer of 1973. Nixon loyalists floated what is known in Washington as a trial balloon. They tipped off the local Washington media that a group of Americans who wanted Nixon to remain president for a third term or even longer had formed a group called the Committee to Repeal the 22nd Amendment. A third presidential term is forbidden by the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. This group gained no immediate support in Washington, and so it quietly died after at most a week of local media mention. However, local Washington Nixon watchers began to worry privately that the Committee to Repeal the 22nd Amendment signaled something much more ominous brewing under the surface. Back to Tucker.
On June 23, 1972, Nixon met with the then CIA Director Richard Helms at the White House. During the conversation, which thankfully was tape recorded, Nixon suggested he knew, quote, who shot John, meaning President John F. Kennedy. Nixon further implied that the CIA was directly involved in Kennedy's assassination, which we now know it was. Holmes' telling response, total silence. But for Nixon, it didn't matter because it was already over. 4 days before, on June 19th, the Washington Post had published the first of many stories about a break-in at the Watergate office building. Unbeknownst to Nixon and unreported by the Washington Post, four of the five burglars worked for the CIA. The first of many dishonest Watergate stories was written by a 29-year-old Metro reporter called Bob Woodward. Who exactly was Bob Woodward? It wasn't a journalist. Bob Woodward had no background whatsoever in the news business. Shortly before Watergate, Woodward was a naval officer at the Pentagon who had a top-secret clearance. He worked regularly with the intel agencies. And just to make it crystal clear what was actually happening, Woodward's main source for his Watergate series was the deputy director of the FBI, Mark Felt. And Mark Felt ran, and we're not making this up, the FBI's COINTELPRO program.
It wasn't called the COINTELPRO program. Anyone who lived through this era and was following this story could immediately catch this mispronunciation of the FBI's counterintelligence program, the COINTEL program,
which was designed to secretly discredit political actors the federal agencies wanted to destroy, people like Richard Nixon.
It wasn't designed for that. Every intel agency has a counterintelligence division to root out spies in their own agencies. The FBI's counterintelligence program was designed to investigate people who were spying for foreign governments against targets in the United States. It was not designed to destroy Richard Nixon. A compartmented section of it may have been illegally used for that purpose, however.
And at the same time, those same agencies were also working to take down Nixon's elected vice president, Spiro Agnew. In the fall of 1973, Agnew was indicted for tax evasion and forced to resign. His replacement was a colorless congressman from Grand Rapids called Gerald Ford. What was Ford's qualification for the job? Well, he had served on the Warren Commission, which absolved the CIA of responsibility for President Kennedy's murder. Nixon was strong-armed into accepting Gerald Ford by Democrats in Congress. Quote, "We gave Nixon no choice but Ford," Speaker of the House Carl Albert later boasted. 8 months later, Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission was the president of the United States. But no mainstream news organization has ever told that story. It's so obvious, yet it's intentionally ignored.
Well, I've been trying to add my addition to that story for nearly 30 years now, and here it is. On October 3, 1973, my father, Lieutenant Colonel William L. Still, one of the architects of the military's super-secret defense communications network and deputy director of the Minuteman ballistic missile program, was approached by an acquaintance, Joe Josephson, who claimed he had connections with the White House of then-President Richard M. Nixon. This acquaintance asked my father how he and his military friends would feel about a military takeover of the U.S. government to prevent communists from taking over. The atmosphere in Washington at that time was thick with political intrigue anyway. The CIA stood accused of domestic spying at home and coup d'etat making in Chile. The Watergate hearings had gone on throughout the summer, and now President Nixon was refusing to comply with court orders to surrender the White House tapes as evidence. The American Civil Liberties Union was taking out full-page ads in the New York Times urging impeachment of the president. My dad was able to conceal his shock long enough to learn some of the details from his associate, Mr. Josephson. Shortly thereafter, he wrote a memorandum detailing the incident and circulated it in military intelligence and FBI channels. This startling memorandum reads as follows. Memorandum for the record. Subject, rumor concerning planning for a military coup within the USA. My name is William L. Still, Lieutenant Colonel USAF, retired. I am writing this statement only after careful consideration of its potential impact on both the country and myself. The following summary is a combination of fact, hearsay, and conjecture. I have limited the subjective data to those areas which I believe will aid in evaluating the source of the rumor and make no comment on the rumor itself. A committee exists which is dedicated to the repeal of the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution. Its goal is to place Mr. Nixon in the White House for a third term. Connected in some manner with this organization is a second committee, which has a super patriotic name, such as the Committee for the Preservation of Constitutional Processes. It is to be used as a fallback cover in the event that the first committee cannot accomplish its goal by constitutional means. The second committee, despite its name, is dedicated to keeping Mr. Nixon in office by any means, including a military coup by high-ranking officers. I heard this rumor on 3 October 1973. The man from whom I heard this story stated he had recently been sounded out on a writing job for the second committee and that there was apparently unlimited money behind it as price was no object in salary discussions. He gave the above rumor as the strategy of the organization. We then entered into a discussion on the tactics which could be used to execute such a coup. During the course of the discussion, I was questioned as to the feasibility of the plan and asked whether I thought senior military men could be enlisted for such an effort. I was already working as a volunteer newsreader at WGTB in Washington, D.C., the radio station of Georgetown University. Dad sent this memo to his friends in the military and to the FBI. He never heard back. We did get some interest from Woodward and Bernstein of the Washington Post, however, and were instructed to come meet with them at one of their residences in D.C. We called and told them we were waiting in the parking lot and were told to wait. Well, we waited for about 3 hours before finally their editor, a man by the name of Bob Fink, who is credited in their later book, All the President's Men, as the editor, came down and said they had changed their minds and didn't want to pursue the story. We were never told why, just curtly dismissed. We also contacted 1970s Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Seymour Hersh, and he was interested in the story as well, but didn't have sufficient corroboration to write about it until it published in the Atlantic Monthly on August 1983, 10 years later, entitled The Pardon. According to Hersh, on December 22, 1973, President Nixon met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and tried to enlist their support in an extra-constitutional action to keep him in power. According to Hersh, one of the Chiefs of Staff recalled Nixon's speech with alarm. He kept on referring to the fact that he may be the last hope that the Eastern elite was out to get him. He kept saying, this is our last and best hope and the last chance to resist the fascists of the left. His words brought me straight out of my chair. I felt that the president, without the words having been said, was trying to sound us out to see if we would support him in some extra-constitutional action. He was trying to find out whether in a crunch there was support to keep him in power. Fears of a Nixon coup, however, did not end in 1973. We now know that throughout 1974, high-level government officials were worried that President Nixon might resort to extra-constitutional measures rather than be forced from office by impeachment due to the cover-up of the Watergate scandal. According to the Hersh piece in the Atlantic Monthly, Nixon's Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, told Hersh that the White House Chief of Staff, Alexander Haig, told Kissinger that Nixon was considering ringing the White House with troops. This, I said, was nonsense. A presidency could not be conducted from a White House ringed with bayonets. Haig said he agreed completely. As a military man, it made him heartsick to think of the Army in that role. He simply wanted me to have a feel for the kinds of ideas being canvassed. On September 27, 1974, the Washington Post ran a story that the Secretary of Defense, James Schlesinger, had taken special measures just before Nixon's resignation to protect the military chain of command should any illegal orders come from President Nixon as he faced certain impeachment. The story was entitled, Military Coup Fears Denied. Defense Secretary James Schlesinger requested a tight watch in the military chain of command to ensure that no extraordinary orders went out from the White House during the period of uncertainty. Pentagon officials have said that Schlesinger never feared that a coup would be successful, even if attempted. Nevertheless, Defense Department officials said that word went out that no commanders of any forces should carry out orders which came from the White House or elsewhere outside normal military channels. Department officials have confirmed that Schlesinger and General George S. Brown, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, discussed among themselves how they should be aware of any illegal orders being issued to military units outside the formal chain of command structure. However, these fears were apparently warranted, as the Seymour Hersh piece, again dated 10 years later in 1983, explained that Secretary of Defense Schlesinger investigated how quickly the Army's 82nd Airborne Division could be brought to Washington, D.C. from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to counterbalance the Marine contingent loyal to Nixon stationed at Fort Myer, sitting just 2 miles west of the White House at the back of Arlington Cemetery. Schlesinger began to investigate what forces could be assembled at his order as a counterweight to the Marines if Nixon, in a crisis, chose to subvert the Constitution. The notion that Nixon could at any time resort to extraordinary steps to preserve his presidency was far more widespread in the government than the public perceived in the early days of Watergate or perceives today. Hersh even suggested the probable military leader,
Bianchi, I'll be right with you, buddy. Just almost over.
Responsible for helping plan the coup attempt. When Richard Nixon was vice president under Eisenhower, he struck up a friendship with his military aide, Robert Cushman. In 1971, it was General Cushman who, as deputy director of the CIA, provided unauthorized CIA support to the illegal escapades of Watergate plumbers E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy. By June 1974, Cushman had been appointed as the Marine representative on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, one of the five most powerful military men in the nation. Schlesinger watched Cushman closely for several months. Schlesinger continued to believe that Cushman, with his personal loyalty to Nixon, was a weak link in the new chain of command. He quietly investigated just which forces would be available to Nixon. The Marines, Cushman's troops, were by far the strongest presence in the Washington area. Nixon finally gave up his quest to become the permanent president in his resignation speech delivered in a nationwide TV address on August 8, 1974, and then only to head off inevitable impeachment and conviction by Congress. He was definitely not the nation's most popular at that time. I've collected and saved this information for many years, hoping for further corroboration, but it appears that this may be all that will be known of how close this nation came to a bitter end exactly 50 years ago. Although the Nixon coup ultimately failed with no damage to the United States, it may have set the pattern upon which the Biden coup was built. A coup which has done very significant damage to the United States from the perspective of the CCP. The main difference between the two has been that the Biden coup was able to successfully purge most military officers who were willing to stand up for their oath of protecting and defending the Constitution, leaving officers who are mostly interested in going along in order to get ahead. And the Biden coup had the benefit of a compliant General Mark Milley, checkmate the military from his exalted post as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the nation's top military man. Nixon was only able to co-opt a small portion of this nation's military officers. Most of them were revolted at the first sign of his extra-constitutional actions. Trump was not so lucky. Although Trump probably had the support of 98% of the military, starting with Obama, the deep bureaucratic state had been positioning its folks at the key positions of military power. I'm still reporting from very near the citadel of world freedom. Good day.
All right. That's Bill Still, the Still Report, a little bit about history. And let me, yeah, there's Pianki. Let me get Pianki on. How you doing, Pianki?
Yeah, I didn't know today was Saturday. How's everybody?
just me and you, so everybody here is doing fine. Me, you, and Otis.
Yeah, time goes by fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Speeds right by. Yeah, I thought I...
Yeah, Nixon took 49 states.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to, you know, this is what I wanted you to hear at the beginning, but you took off. I wanted you to hear. This is what I was looking for the other night to play. And very interesting about Woodward and his little, how he had his little mitts in there, and he wasn't really a reporter. I didn't know any of that.
Well, that stuff goes on even today with this news media.
Yeah.
And they are some of the most triflings. And it all goes on because of one thing, Donnie, because the American public is ignorant. They never was taught the things that you and I was taught or came across one way or the other. And
right.
They are totally absent-minded to the fact. They don't know how government works, what it's supposed to do, who's supposed to be in charge of it, and none of that stuff. It's all based on emotional and what they consider something that we call subjective, and that's right or wrong.
Yeah, I do agree. I do agree. Yeah, things are different than when we were younger.
Yeah.
And they got everything in their fingertips, and that's, we didn't have that when we were growing up. They could find all.
No, we didn't. We only had three news searches, NBC, CBS, and ABC, I think it was.
Yeah, that's it.
Walter Cronkite, Chet, Brinkley, and
David and Chet. Good night, David. Good night, Chet. And that's all from the NBC newsroom in New York. I remember that.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sure
Ain't
do.
Nothing like it is now.
No. Not close.
I never knew what the word anti-American was. I never heard it before until recent in life.
I don't remember.
Anti-American? You quitting? You kidding? Anti-American? Hey, after watching John Wayne kill Indians from 8 to 12, from 12 to 4, he was shooting down Japs. What are you talking about?
I remember standing up every morning facing the flag in our room, homeroom, and doing the Pledge of Allegiance every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were trying times, and people talking about it. Laws ain't going to do it because the only way you're going to straighten out things before the ultimate is provide amendments to the Constitution. That's the only way, because laws are not going to do it, because laws, people disregard them as it is now. It's going to have to be a constitution. You're going to have to hold these politicians accountable, and then you're going to have to go back to teaching the right things in your schools, in your government schools.
Yeah, you're right.
Because the kids don't know it. So how are you going to ask a person 22, 23, 24, 25 years old and correct them on their behavior when they never have understood, never was taught what their proper behavior as a citizen is supposed to be?
That's right. Let me get 323. Here we go. 323, you're on.
Well, hello, Donnie. How you doing?
Hey, look at here. Mr. Stranger.
Sound like Joe.
Hey. How you doing?
I got tears coming down my face. Brother Joe.
Where you been, Joe?
You know, here I am. I'm looking at the roster here at Blog Talk Radio, and I'm seeing Beyond the Mainstream. So I'm saying, okay, what he's got scheduled for tonight? Take a look at your description page. And he said you're going to play tape.
It's a tape,
so
yeah.
I listened to a tape for 30 seconds, come back 4 minutes later, it's still playing. So I figured, all right, long tape. Come back 2 minutes later, still playing. And I'm figuring, Jesus, a lot of people must have sent you a lot of tapes if you're going to be playing tapes that long.
That was the same tape. That was a history tape of Nixon back in the day in China. And Woodward, the famous reporter, remember? That wasn't really a reporter. I didn't know that.
And what's his name? Warburg? You say Warburg?
No. Woodward.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Bernstein.
Oh, the Woodward Bernstein, yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't a damn reporter at all. And, Jesus.
He wasn't?
No, I didn't know that. Tucker reported on it the other night, so I started, I never heard that, so I started looking into. And then this guy, Bill Still, his father was a colonel, and Nixon was thinking about using the 82nd Airborne out of Fort Bragg to ring the White House, and he was going to stay in power and not resign. And he was looking into all this crap.
Oh, shit.
I didn't know any of this stuff. And this guy, Bill Still's got the memos, the letters, and everything else he sent. And they, Seymour Hersh was going to do the story on it. And he said he just needed more proof, more evidence. And 10 years later, he finally wrote about it. And we almost had us a big problem back in 1974.
Yeah, Nixon was a bitch. You talk about a pure politician. He was like he and Lyndon Johnson. They would bend the rules and break everything in order to get what they wanted. They had no scruples.
No, they didn't.
And Nixon had some good points too. But he was of the times. Heck, he told Daley when Arthur Fletcher was in Chicago trying to make some things along the lines of in the building trade for the affirmative action, and the labor bosses didn't like it. Matter of fact, he was trying to go after Arthur Fletcher. Him and his wife was held up in a hotel room with furniture against the door. And some way or another, he got word to Nixon. Nixon called Daley and said, if you harm one hair on the head of that man, come Monday, I have the 82nd Airborne marching down Michigan Avenue. So,
he liked the 82nd Airborne, that's for sure. And he said he wanted to ring the White House with nothing but military, but he didn't know how strong he was with the military. And he was looking into the Marine Corps and seeing if they would back him. He named some generals. General Haig was one of them, of course.
Alexander. I remember him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan Haig.
Yeah, Al Haig. Yeah, he was a winner. He was a winner. He got as far as he wanted. He ran for president, too. He put his hat in the ring one year, and I don't remember what year it was, but he didn't, I think, dropped out like the second primary.
What the best military man for president? Of course, there's only been one. That was Eisenhower. Eisenhower was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, he helped bring about that bus boycott to an end in Montgomery, Alabama. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know he had anything to do with it.
See, those buses was owned by, guess who? National City Lines, who was owned by General Motors.
Ah, National. I remember that was right on the front of their grill was National.
Mm-hmm. And General Motors, National had buses all throughout the country except for one place, and that was in Winston-Salem, South Carolina. And that was a black company called the SAFE, S-A-F-E company, that they couldn't compete with. And it just finally went out of business in the 1970s. But at that time, you had electric streetcars running every place. And General Motors wanted their buses, and they wanted their cars. And because they was promoting and pushing Eisenhower to put in the National Highway System, which eventually he did do. And you had people from Standard Oil, your Rockefellers, and it was several other. Actually, it was five sisters they used to call it: Standard Oil, Chevron, Exxon, and two others I can't think of the name of. Texaco, and he wanted Arthur P. Sloan, who was the president of General Motors,
yeah,
to call that, you know, do what they needed to do, so that the buses could go back to running. And really, it never would have happened, because the only place that they were boycotting the buses was in the black part of town. And you had members of that organization that they went and subscribed King to. Then you had members like Shuttlesport. They wanted to go to Winston-Salem to get the black bus company to come and provide bus service there in Montgomery. But Sloan went on and had the thing eventually come to an end, which helped Eisenhower. You know, Eisenhower, what he done in 1957 with the Little Rock school incident.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was a pretty good guy. The only thing I don't like the way he done one of my favorite generals, and that was George S. Patton.
No, he didn't want he didn't do Patton any favors. I'll tell you that. Yeah, he was on
his ass. You got a real in power. And it was like when, as you were saying, Donnie, if Nixon wanted to outline or outfit the president of the administration with the military, he was looking for a dictatorship, and we don't need that. We need the politicians to stay as politicians, and military stay on their side of the fence. We don't need to mix them.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you're right about that. We don't need that. But I don't know how close we're getting to something like that. It just feels strange. This feels, I don't know. Right? All of a sudden, things have turned on Biden. His own party is now, even CNN, some of their folks are turning on Biden at MSNBC.
You got to wonder about that. All of a sudden, the narrative is that the vaccines might be dangerous. Maybe you shouldn't administer them to kids. And you have to wonder, how come all of a sudden the narrative, which for the last 2 years has been vaccine is good, COVID isn't that, well, COVID is dangerous, that's why I take the vaccine, it's safe for kids, and now all of a sudden they're doing a 180-degree turn. I wonder about that.
Yeah.
I think one thing had to do is all these people falling dead. You know, I had two or three of them don't fall dead. And funny thing, you had several of them from the Detroit Lions, one of which was a friend of mine that died on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And a retired defensive end just died. I think he was 35. He was retired, but he died. And what, you know, terrible. And then you hear Veritas. Did you see that tape by any chance?
Oh, I heard about it. I didn't hear it, but I heard about it.
This guy.
Yeah, with Pfizer's CEO.
Yeah, he was the.
I got it
right here. But I can't. What the hell was this CEO of? I can't remember.
Pronounce his name.
No, I'm not even going to try. But he was a CEO of one part of the company. But I don't know. But then, did you see him fighting? He was pissed. Oh Lord! When here comes O'Keefe up to him, and that was then. Man, he was pissed. And then he said, "I was lying. I was, you know, I was on a date."
Yeah. I was lying.
Let's see if I got the part.
Last night, Project Veritas released a video of a Pfizer director discussing the mutation of COVID for profit, preemptively mutating the virus so they can make vaccines and continue to make money. The video is so shocking, many are saying that, one, it could break the internet. We'll see. Already, the corporate press is ignoring the story, though Real Clear Politics has picked it up. They're less so establishment. They tend to actually do some real news, so at least we've got some larger outlets covering this. But the story is absolutely crazy. It confirms the biases of so many people to see a Pfizer director outright saying, you know that stuff that we're accused of doing? Like, we actually do it. Don't tell anyone, though. Now, the story is so shocking that many people are actually suggesting that it was a trap for Project Veritas. This is what I find crazy. You got people saying Ron DeSantis is a plant or whatever, or Ron DeSantis is deep state or something like that. And it's like, yo, Ron DeSantis is giving you everything you want. And so then you come out and you're like, must be a trick. Well, look, I don't know what to tell you, man. Okay? I'm not saying Ron DeSantis has to be your candidate in 2024. I'm saying if something comes out and in the simple solution, the solution that makes the least amount of assumptions is outright that this thing happened and accept it. I know a lot of people feel this way. They feel if it's too good to be true, it probably is. But, yo, my friends, I understand that sentiment, but this story isn't about anything being too good for anything. It's quite literally all of the evidence lining up and pointing in a direction that makes the most sense. It would be like saying, you know, this guy gets murdered, and we find a weapon with the initials, you know, a knife with GR engraved in it. And then we find a man named George Roberts who owns the same vehicle, whose initials match the murder weapon, who was seen by witnesses there, who was known to have been in an argument with the man that died.
All right. What's gain of function
research?
See,
I got to slow down. You know, the problem is much,
apparently. I'm trying to find a...
Okay.
Oh, hell, that's not it.
More media does really, it's more investigations because of the death is literally.
All right, I'll find it eventually. I'll find it. I don't know what the hell happened there. I thought that was a tape, Bianchi. I thought that was a tape.
Well, we know why come all this stuff came about the way it did. And it's several reasons. Ultimately, it's people making money off of these pandemics.
Yeah.
The public should have been susceptible, or suspicious, should I say. They should have been suspicious when they removed the exempt these companies from liability in case somebody get injured. I ain't going to use anything like that that's produced by a mass manufacturer, and then if something was to happen, you don't know what the heck, you don't have any recourse. And, of course, they want to keep Donald Trump from having any preeminence. All this is starting to come to head.
Yeah.
And don't tell where it's going to end with these athletes falling dead. Suppose you have a Super Bowl game after the first kickoff, blow the whistle, and everybody's running back to the sideline. You look downfield, you got about three or four players laying on the ground on their back.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, if I was an athlete right now playing football or basketball or hockey and I took the shots and did the boosters, I'd be very damn nervous. I'd be real nervous.
Hell yeah.
I really would. That's some serious thing. These young people are just falling over dead from high school on up, are just falling over. Now, how about the attorney? Yeah, I'm sure I remember playing this when it happened a year and a half ago. The attorney that firebombed a New York police car. You guys remember that? He was an attorney, and he was in another car, and they go upside of a police car and throw a cocktail in there and burn it, bomb the hell out of it. And it was during the BLM protest. Well, the judge gave the guy, the attorney, a year, but he also, he was praised by the judge. You know, the judge, you know, said, you know, oh, I'll let
justice.
Hold on.
I love this story so much. Because I have two stories for you. One is about a man who firebombed a police vehicle and whose associates were driving around handing out firebombs. And he gets 1 year in prison and a fine and probation. That's, you know, make sure the context is all there. And the judge says, you're a good guy. You know, sentences a terrorist to 1 year. There's another story. It's about a guy who walked into the Capitol building, put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk, and then made vulgar comments. That guy is facing multiple years for obstruction of a government proceeding. Now, I don't want to speak specifically to that one guy. He's just the iconic guy. But many of the January 6th defendants, while they did wrong, simply milled about. Some of these people have been completely acquitted because there's videos of police opening the doors for them. Some of these people were actually fighting their way on one side, while many others had the doors opened and were fanned in by police. That actually got more than one person acquitted. Now, one guy had some charges acquitted, but ultimately they were like, look, while, yeah, they did let you in, I can see right here you're walking over a barricade, so that you're going to get trespassing for. One guy was just like, dude, I walked in the building. The cop told me to come in. Showed the video. The judge went, yeah, that's actually correct. That's the interesting thing. I think there were several people in January 6th who opted for a bench trial, have a judge determine, and the judge actually was fair about it. And the people who went for the jury trial, well, just got the book thrown at them because the juries just hate you. But I love this. Attorney who helped firebomb NYPD car during BLM protest sentenced to prison. An amazing story where not only does he get a very light sentence, but the judge actually praises the guy. Okay, fine. This is why I don't live in New York City anymore. And it's sad. You know, I was watching that video from Project Veritas the other day where James is in New York City. He's confronting this Pfizer guy. And he's like, we're here in New York City. And I was like, I kind of miss New York. You know, there are things about it it's that are nice. But it's just a dystopian nightmare at this point. You can't do it. And this is exactly it. And now outside of these stories, we have CNN doing an interview with a police, I think it's the police chief in Atlanta, in Memphis, I'm not sure, but a police officer who's saying that the video of Tyree being beaten by the police is worse than Rodney King.
It's pretty damn bad, I'll tell you that right now. I've just seen it about four times. It is terrible.
Well, they said it one. See, he was messing with one of the police officer's girlfriends. I don't know. Anyway, the narrative has been taken away. The popular narrative is no longer there, right?
Right.
In these instances.
It's all black police officers. And every one of them were fired pretty quick. And
well, you know, the thing about that, Donnie, why are you showing the video and the investigation is not a conclusion? So what is it doing to the possibility of a impartial jury?
You're not going to find one. These guys, they're going to hang these guys. You know it and I know it. That's why they did it. Let's get it all out in the open right now. And yeah, we've been waiting for the Pelosi tape to be released for I don't know how many months now, but here they just released this police officer pretty quick.
And the police chief in an interview all but admit guilt and guilt. In the operations.
Yeah.
You know, she practically admitted that they done wrong before all the evidence is in. But I kind of feel sorry for that city. That particular special operation that was involved there was in that area because of these cars take over the city, you know, and be racing and carjacking and stuff like that.
But boy, I tell you what, watching this, Rocky, I don't. Have you seen this tape of the?
No, I don't want to see it.
Oh,
yeah, I don't want to see it.
It's terrible. That is, it's terrible. I feel.
Then they had to chase the guard. They had to chase the man. And then we look at Chicago, Laurie Whitefoot suspended foot chase with their police department. If poor Otis was a police dog, he couldn't even chase nobody. in Chicago. So things are screwed up all over, man.
Oh. Now, Tucker had the guy that's running against her on the other day. Let me get Lorianne on.
What is he? Is he tall and 4'6", ain't he?
I don't know, but I'll find a tape here in a second. How you doing, Lorianne? You had your hand up, dear. You don't want to talk to us either. You dismissed Joe. Anyway, Lorianne, you're probably listening. You dismissed Joe. I played a tape for about a minute and 40 seconds. He hung up. So there you go. I was only going to play a minute. I only played a couple of minutes of it.
But, you know, so much wrong all over the board. And Joe Brown, you know, see, Judge Joe Brown, he's running for mayor of Memphis. And he say all this stuff is a bunch of bull crap. Now, of course, we would hope that the police wouldn't do what they did, but we also need to look at the suspects themselves, the public. The public is involved in so much criminality, and police are dogged out in their interactions. And then you have institutions like the NAACP that early on, you know, they issued that ban on travel through Missouri, saying that white police officers are more likely to kill some black folks. Well, what the hell you expect? That there should be very critical of them to the point of causing a lawsuit. You're predisposing people to run from the police.
Right.
Yeah, it's the police. Didn't we hear what NAACP said? They're going to kill us?
Mm-hmm.
I ain't stopping.
Yeah. Oh, we got a lot of people on the switchboard. We'll play tape two here and there, but
you just drawing like that, Donnie. I ain't gonna be around here with you, know, 3 o'clock in the damn morning. I'm telling you that right now.
Well, I'm just gonna.
Dropped by to see what was going on. I thought somebody broke into control of the station.
We're just on here, just a little. Yeah, we do. And how you doing?
Good.
We're just here.
Hey, sorry about that. My earbuds were like. So I didn't understand what you were saying, so I had to switch over. So,
all right.
Anyway, hi guys.
Hi. We're just here. I was gonna just play a few tapes, and tell Doll's show, and do a little bit, and then take a break and show back up on Doll's show, which is 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And
little over an hour.
And Joe was here, Lorianne. He was here for a minute, then he hung up because I played a little bit of a tape.
he can only tolerate like 20 seconds of a clip, and then he hangs up. Yeah.
you know, Facebook is back at the game. One of my friends, Josie, posted a picture of her 40 years ago at their wedding. And I commented and said, you know, I should get in my time machine and go back the day before that and kidnap you. and saying that she wouldn't be there at the wedding.
The kidnapping.
So then Facebook said, well, that's evil. That's hateful. We're going to put you in Facebook jail for 29 days.
Oh, my.
They don't understand the culture of what kidnap means, you know, the kidnapping the bride, you know, and that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing to me. Oh, my God.
Well, look at me being in Facebook jail for 30 days for that stupid meme of Hunter Biden, you know, that picture of Hunter Biden in his underwear, you know, smoking. That's all over the place. And then that was put into in front of the garage with boxes of classified documents and Biden's Corvette. And they put me in Facebook jail for 30 days for sexual exploitation.
Yeah. Ain't that dumb, man?
It's the dumbest shit, and it's still in review. It's
And how did you ever find out how to go about reviewing it? They talk about it, but they don't show you how to do it. You go from page to page. Soon later, 45 minutes don't pass. You still have you just going in circles.
Yeah. Well, when you first go in, like one of the last pages you go through, it says, you know, accept the decision or disagree with decision. And so I selected disagree with decision, and then somebody's supposed to review it in a reasonable amount of time to, you know, to give you a chance, you know, they can review it, an actual person, because, you know, it's the bot, it's the AI bot that initially snags you, and then an actual person is supposed to review it once you, you know, say, hey, I disagree. And so, yeah, it's still sitting there in review. Nobody's looked at it yet. So I have a feeling like, you know, all the tech companies are doing all these layoffs. So I have a feeling that Facebook
bots going to be taking their place, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. Like, we don't need actual people to review this. We'll just rely on our AI bots instead, you know, and goodbye. And yeah, what they're doing. Facebook
well,
is
you know what I post now.
Ridiculous.
When I now post things that I think is going to be raising an eyebrow, I also mention, well, if you can't read this on this site, go to Twitter. Here's my address, and go to Parker, and I'm just warning them. Say, you might cut me off here, but there's other places where I can talk.
Oh, yeah. Rumble. A lot of people are going to Rumble. And because they can say certain words and get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. YouTube and Facebook cut you right at the knees. You know the football player that had the heart attack that played for Buffalo Bills, right? And they showed
yeah, Hamlin.
Him. Yeah. And Damar Hamlin. Now they had him at the game. They showed him at the game, but they didn't show his face or anything. He had a hoodie on, right? And you never did get a clear picture of his face. And the next day, after this game, and after they said he was there and shows him walking around and everything, it shows him in rehab. The man can't hardly walk. I mean, he can barely walk. He's like in rehab.
He don't play football no more.
No, but that wasn't him either. That was that couldn't have been him. On the timestamp of the picture was the next day after the Bills lost that football game, and he was in. You could tell he's in a big rehab place, and he was trying to walk. He was like he's relearning how to walk. And he's going, super slow, and he's looking terrible. He looks terrible. And so I'm wondering if somebody's playing a little game, to keep this vaccination off the top shelf. Yeah, they're showing pictures of this guy. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, I'm starting to have my ruthers about professional football anyway. I've been seeing some clips and stories that these wide receivers got Madden in their glove, and the balls are metal, or some portion of metal. That's how they're making these one-hand catches in that, behind your back and everything.
I seen the one-handed catch the other day, yeah, last Sunday.
Something's going on, Donnie.
Ah, just good athletes.
You have to have a hand big as a damn trash can lid to do some of these stuff.
Well, the women like it. Come on. Give them a break. Damn. What else was there? Somebody else sent me some stuff. I can't. I'm trying to find a guy that's running. He was on Tucker, and I thought maybe he was a little, maybe retarded a little bit the way he was sounding. And I was wondering if anybody else has heard this guy. Now, Willie, I think his first name is Willie, that's running against the mayor of
Chicago.
Yeah.
Willie Wilson? He's been running for ages.
Willie
Wilson. He's a wealthy guy.
He was a baseball player, too, for the Kansas City A's, or Royals, rather. Kansas City A's goes back way back.
When the pandemic started, he volunteered to buy masks for a whole lot of organizations and that. No, he was going to do it. Oh, I know what it was. The city, instead of going to him, they bypassed him and went someplace else. And, which was really stupid. Why come you wouldn't get a business to Chicago? And he's been running for office for a long time.
Okay, I've never heard of him. I never heard of the guy.
Yeah.
No.
National Security can.
Did you? Yeah. How about Adam Schiff? Poor guy. He's all upset that he's lost his seat. And finally, I think today I heard that they took Ilhan off the committee too.
Yeah.
So all of them are mad.
Congressman Schiff raising even more national security concerns after posting on TikTok. Yeah, that's the app closely tied to the Chinese Communist Party and banned on U.S. government devices in at least 30 states.
Hello, I'm Congressman Adam Schiff with some troubling news. Today, Kevin McCarthy removed me from the House Intelligence Committee, all for doing my job, for holding Trump accountable, and standing up to the extreme MAGA Republicans.
Joe Concha joins us now. Joe, I'm going out on a limb here, but I'm going to say this is exactly the type of behavior.
Uh-oh. Kind of a gun. All right, somebody just sent me this. Hang on. It's Willie Wilson, and he says...
Rudrance for Black and White Network. I don't know how I missed this, but I did miss this. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I'd have gotten it fresh. I just saw Willie Wilson, an independent, a businessman, up in Chicago, warfare, war zone Chicago, come out and make one of the most responsible statements I have heard anybody connected and trying to be involved in anything to do with politics in Chicago ever. One of the most responsible statements I maybe have ever heard ever. And it comes down to crime. Now, Mr. Wilson has lost a son to crime in Chicago, so it's personal to him. And so I understand the emotion here. But I think he's absolutely got the right idea. I heard him say something to the effect of, we've got to take the handcuffs off of the police officers. Now, Lori Lightfoot, she come out and condemned this statement that Willie Wilson made. She's so offended. And I would say that's about everything wrong with Lori Lightfoot in one two-sentence statement from her. I condemn this. Nobody should be hunted down in this manner. They're criminals. Absolutely, they should. And that's the problem. That's your problem. That's your city's problem, is that line of thinking. You're giving the criminals more rights than the victims. We've covered the violence in Chicago on this channel quite a bit. Let's listen to this, because I love this statement from Mr. Wilson.
Car. That police officer should be able to chase them down and hunt them down like a rabbit, okay?
Far from okay, with Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who fired,
hunt them down like a rabbit.
Bravo.
Heard back at her rival after
the... Wilson Lightfoot being outraged.
Debate was over. For a candidate for mayor to say that we ought to take the handcuffs off the police and let them hunt down human beings like rabbits is an extraordinary thing. I fully and utterly condemn it.
And that's everything wrong with you, Lori Lightfoot, in one statement. Right there. I fully condemn that. And that seems to be my problem. Seems to be all the Democrats' problems when it comes to crime, is that you condemn that. By the way,
don't know if anybody noticed this, because they can't blame this on white supremacy or racism, because Mr. Wilson is, in fact, black. I don't know if anybody knew that before they get out there and start blaming that on white supremacy, although they've been known to, the Democrats have been known to call blacks white supremacists.
All right. Willie Wilson. And never looked like there's a lot of people running for mayor.
Yeah, who wants to be associated with all that?
Well,
even insane people.
They got a lot of mess to clean up. That is true.
They ain't going to clean. You know what's going to happen is these people are going to sooner or later die out, because I'm looking at these numbers on these shootings from this year to what would end in May of this year, from May of last year, is down to, as of last, the 24th, is down to 2,686 shootings with 438 murders. And this is, they got four more months to go. I don't think they're going to get up to 4,666. 2,000 off, they might. And
they might.
Look like they 100. Look like they 170 murders off. Maybe a little bit more than that. 205 murders off from time last year. So people, ain't nobody left to shoot. You know, it's a funny thing. That's going to be the mark of a lot of people. To let you, hey, they ever have a Chicago reunion, everybody going to be showing their gunshot wound. 20-year Chicago reunion.
Yeah.
here's my wound right here.
Oh,
yeah,
it's a shame.
If you don't have a gunshot wound to show off, then they're going to deny that you ever lived in Chicago. They're like, you're not from here. You're lying.
Yeah, you're lying.
Yeah, you bet. You'd be one of the only few that doesn't have a shotgun wound. Our girl Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's introducing legislation to label Antifa as a domestic terrorist group organization, which should have been done 2 years ago, but nobody would do it. And the FBI, they still will not label them as domestic terrorists.
Oh, no, I know, right? And the left is defending them. The left was all like, well, they're not an organization. But we should support them.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything wrong. You know, like all that kind of stuff. It's like, they're not? You know, look at freaking Portland. They pretty much still rule Portland. Which I expect that's going to blow up too. And I have questions, okay, because like I'm totally behind the times with the rioting that's going on in Atlanta right now, and apparently it's, you know, police released body cam footage of some guy that died, and I haven't seen all the footage yet, but will you guys get me up to speed a little bit? Because I definitely want to, before I get on to Doll's show, I want to try to hunt down the video and watch the body cam footage and figure out, you know, what all the outrage is about.
Memphis, there was five police officers, and it was a black guy, kid, young man. I don't know. He's not a kid, but he was a young man. And five big black officers, okay? The word is black. They're all black, so they can't be, you know, no whites involved. They beat the hell out of this guy so bad. He lived 3 days and died. I mean, it is a sickening tape. I feel so terrible for the parents. And the mother was out there tonight telling everybody, please be, it's a peaceful protest. You're going to be here for us. It's going to be peaceful. Don't burn our city down. And
they're not going to listen.
No, Antifa's involved. I want everybody to remember that. Antifa's already been on, I don't know, because they're not saying, but they're saying on social media that to burn Memphis down to the ground. And that is on social media. I don't know where, because I don't think they could get away with that on Twitter. I don't know where
not actually organizing,
No headline. They showed the headline on the wherever they posted this thing. And Jesus, come on. I mean, we can't even talk about election fraud without getting kicked out and suspended. These people can threaten a whole city. And they want them to meet and join up tonight. And, you know, and these aren't black people. These is mostly 90% white.
Exactly. They're fascist themselves. You know, they don't even really realize how fascist they are with how they operate. But they're trying to convince everybody. You know, it's another one of those, you know, give a description that's the exact opposite of what you are. Like we have in our legislation bills and stuff like that. Antifa is exactly the opposite of their name.
Mm-hmm.
Craziness. Yeah, I got to try to get up to speed on that and see what's going on. And this is going to spread. I don't know if it's already spreading. I want to look at, you know, some Portland news to see if Portland's exploding tonight or not. Because, you know, Antifa here in Portland, any chance they get, any excuse they have, they'll go and destroy downtown Portland any chance they can.
Yeah.
And so why did they release this video on a Friday night? I mean, on a Friday?
I don't know.
That is the dumbest thing. Like, yeah, we want to have an entire weekend of unrest, you know?
Yeah. 7 o'clock tonight is the time they said they were going to release it. Why in the hell they would do that, I don't know. I have no idea why they would do that.
Yeah, let's wait till it's dark outside.
You just conked out there, Lorianne. Lorianne's having trouble with her communication device tonight. Well, she'll be back.
I'm trying to catch up on these riots that are going on in Atlanta.
Well, yeah. You see that white guy that got arrested, that young man, sticking his tongue out and everything? You didn't see that? Yeah, they drug him out of the woods.
But I didn't know it was a human. We need Daniel to look at that.
Yeah. What an embarrassment to a family.
Drug him out of the woods. Boy, I tell you.
That's where they put all these tents up out down in those woods, and that's where that cop got shot. And they lit the guy up to shot the cop, and I guess you're not supposed to do that. You can't kill the guy that shot the cop. So now they're down there rioting. Don't know, Bianchi.
These attorneys, the police loose. Hey, are they not going to have any? Because nobody want to work in these areas because the people are crazy. And I believe some of these families be sacrificing their kids for the money.
Well, you know, I didn't think about this woman, this mother that tonight about her. You know, her son's the one that died. But I did think she owns this city now, because the police chief has already come out, and they already had a trial. I mean, trial by newspaper, radio, and TV. They're convicted, and they haven't even been to trial. They don't even have lawyers yet. And the police department has already fired them, charged them with second-degree murder. Come on. These guys don't have a chance in hell. And all you had to do now is you don't even have to go to court. But you know, it's the same lawyer that with the Michael Brown case. He was with
Crump.
Yeah, Crump.
He's no trial lawyer. All he is an attorney.
Well, he's getting his money's worth.
Anybody can do what he's doing.
Sharpton's trying to figure out how he can get his ass involved here.
All you got to do is know how to fill out paperwork. Contact lawyers. I mean, insurance companies.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a lot of insurance money involved with this.
Well, Donnie, I'm not going to stay on here all night. I got to get some rest.
I'm going to
be advertising the show.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate you stopping by, Bianchi.
We got to be. I thought somebody had broke in the place and was imitating you or something. And I feel kind of concerned.
Well, I appreciate you coming in checking on me. Let me get.
How's Kathy? You talk to her?
No, I haven't. Not at all. I don't
rattle her cage a little bit.
Somebody. I'll call her tonight. Matter of fact, well, I won't call her. I'll call Daniel. See if he'll answer the phone. See what's up.
Yeah, find out what's going on with him.
I did call.
Leave us all in suspense.
Yeah. No kidding. Cinnamon, you are on to say hi and goodbye to Bianchi. He's about to leave us.
Hi, Bianchi. Good night.
How you doing, Cinnamon? You guys still having cold weather up there?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Come on, Bianchi. We have 4 inches of snow out there now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I don't feel jealous.
Well, if you do, we can send you some, or you can come spend a few with us.
Yeah, get Otis some little bootsy so he can walk out there in the snow.
Yeah, that snow's right up to his belly.
Yeah. He getting thump spots, his feet don't touch the ground, he's stuck. You have to come rescue him.
Well,
anyway, I'm gonna let you go, man. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I'll kick off of here too myself in a minute.
We don't want to give him too much.
No, we'll be back tomorrow night. And Bianchi, you take care of yourself. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. All right, brother Bianchi, Cinnamon.
Yeah.
How about some Mark Dice?
I never thought that a Project Veritas investigation into a serious subject would have turned out to be also hilarious, looking like a slapstick comedy sketch. But we are living in an insane society, as you know. But before we get into that footage, it all started when they got one of the directors of research at Pfizer, the big pharma company, on video admitting that the company appears to be doing gain-of-function research, which, as you know very well, may have led to the coronavirus leaking or being released on purpose out of the Wuhan lab, causing the entire pandemic.
Pfizer ultimately is thinking of mutating COVID.
Well, that is not what we say, but
you may recall that for over a year it was against the terms of service to post on social media platforms that the coronavirus may have been man-made and may have leaked from the Wuhan lab. You weren't supposed to ask those kinds of questions, but a year into the pandemic, about May of 2021, those kinds of questions just couldn't be ignored anymore. And so Facebook and the other big platforms quietly changed their terms of service and allowed people to, well, discuss the truth. And now for the fun part. Yesterday, Project Veritas posted a follow-up report showing James O'Keefe confronting the person, as they usually do later, with the footage of them saying the things that the director at Pfizer said he wasn't supposed to be talking about.
You work for Pfizer. My question for you is, why does Pfizer want to hide from the public the fact that they're mutating COVID viruses?
I'm literally a liar. I was trying to impress a person on a date.
What's my loss?
So he's saying that they're not doing the kind of research that he said that they were doing, and that he was just lying to his date, trying to impress them about the creepy, weird, apocalyptic type of research that his company was doing.
You really did.
Can you please
come
off your
door?
No,
don't let them leave. Okay, so he called the police, and the restaurant locked the door, which actually is a felony. That is false imprisonment. You're not allowed to prevent somebody from leaving a particular person. This is the first crime committed against Project Veritas and the beginning of the chaos. Secretary just stole the iPad, which had the footage that James was using to show him what he had said earlier.
Meet Ben. He's a senior manager at Extreme Express, a logistics company.
Slack helps us do more with less. Having all of our file sharing and communications in one place that's easily searchable.
Get 50% off Slack Pro, a more efficient way to work.
There's a difference between theft and robbery. Robbery is theft that also includes violence. And that violence doesn't even have to cause injury. So him literally just shoving somebody and then stealing the iPad elevates it now to felony robbery. Cameraman, that was self-defense. Adding to the hilarity when the criminal was on the phone calling the police on Project Veritas, or really in a sense himself, he also conveyed that he was concerned that there wasn't enough diversity amongst the Project Veritas camera crew.
Do you want to put me in jail for asking you a question? What is the intention of calling the police? Can I talk to you, please, about this video?
There's four, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 white people.
Why would you bring race into this? May I show you the video? Can I ask you about
there is nothing normal about you, buddy. I'm going to play that again in case you didn't catch what he just said.
I live on a birthday with a guy and I know him then. You lied to him about a date.
Please unlock the door.
Get him right away. Get him right away.
Okay, that's pretty much the gist of it. So far, the mainstream media is ignoring this story, and the Daily Mail over in London deleted this article that they had published about it. Why don't we just mutate it ourselves? Director of research at Pfizer reveals in undercover footage, firm is exploring manipulating COVID more potent by infecting monkeys to create new vaccines. Marco Rubio sent the letter to the CEO of Pfizer demanding answers, and we don't get them. then we could just subpoena him because now Republicans control the House of Representatives, and that means we are in control of the committees and have subpoena power. And speaking of committees, Congressman Adam Schiff, who used to be the head of the House Intelligence Committee, was just kicked off of that committee entirely by the new Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, and he's very upset about that.
Today, Kevin McCarthy removed me from the House Intelligence Committee, all for doing my job, for holding Trump accountable, and standing up to the extreme MAGA Republicans.
Okay, so that is a meme. I think it was Maze.
I think you can hear that, right, Cinnamon?
Yeah. I can't hear the
Did you hear the tape?
I heard part of it. I didn't hear the undercover stuff. I couldn't tell what it was saying. I could hear it.
When the hell didn't you stop me?
Because I could hear the. Sorry.
I mean, can you hear
it's
this?
More on Twitter. Okay. But that is
a
real.
I can hear it. And I can hear what he's saying. When he plays the clip on the undercover part, you can't tell what they're saying.
No, because they're screaming.
You can hear it.
Okay. That.
I had a filter too from TikTok. Okay, so Joe Biden actually just last month signed an executive order banning TikTok from all government phones because of the security risk, okay, because it's basically a spy app for the communist Chinese. And so what does Adam Schiff do? He started a TikTok account, and that was his first video.
Jesus. Okay. Honey, we're the only two here now. Everybody's dropped off. So we'll let you know. I'm going to have me some beef broth and a good big old glass of moon juice. See you in a minute.
Okay, I'm going to finish my pizza. Love you.
Love you. Bye.